14, I yell. The Telstars, 1962. From the Tornadoes, from England. Talking on the phone right now to Ralph Jones of E-Town. Ralph, are you ready to play 14 trivia?
Yeah.
Okay, your category is music identification. All you have to do is identify a particular segment of an oldie, and if you get that right, you win a delicious banana split from E-Town, from Descartes E-Town Dairy Queen at 321 South Marbury in E-Town. We're also going to give you two free fish sandwiches from Wendy's. Okay, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Identify this song.
I remember when you couldn't wait to love me, used to hate to leave.
Yes, go ahead and answer.
Either you don't send me flowers?
Yes, you're correct. We congratulate you. The next time we play 14 Trivia, Movie Trivia is up.
14 WIEL, and I'm talking with Michael Marvin, who you may have known as Harry Harrison back in the day, back at WIEL. Mike, good to see you. Good to talk to you again.
Well, same here. Good to be here. Good for you to be here.
What years were you there at WIEL?
First time I was there from 1977 to 1984, and then again from 1986 to 1989.
Did you go by Harry Harrison both times or just one time?
That first time I went by Harry, well, actually my air name was changed to Harry Michael Harrison. Of course, Harry Harrison was the name of a famous New York disc jockey.
Right, I've heard of him.
Uh-huh. And the Harry Michael Harrison came about because we had a news girl one time, and she would, when I would introduce her, she would say, "Thank you, Michael." And that's what how I came up with my actual first name being tacked on as a middle name for my air name.
Wow. So Michael Marvin is your actual given birth name.
My actual name. I've had people tell me that my name, my real name, is a kind of a natural sounding air name.
It is. Harry Harrison didn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that click that Michael Marvin does. Of course, everybody knows you by Michael Marvin or Mr. Oldies.
Uh-huh.
Bringing that up, I'm going to jump down my list of questions here to when were you first given the name Mr. Oldies, and what makes you so knowledgeable about the record world?
Well, when I was growing up in Valley Station, I listened to a lot of radio and I even bought records a whole lot, and I became very fascinated by records. Even back when I was a kid, and I was very interested. Before I got into radio, I wanted to work at a recording studio.
Really?
I was always fascinated by how records are made and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I was very interested in this sort of thing, but eventually radio lost out. Because what happened was, I wrote a letter to a record company one time, and they said to be a recording engineer, you have to learn how to read music.
Now,
and
really?
That's what I was told in a letter. And so I kind of gave up the idea of ever engineering. If I have to learn to read music, then forget it. But then I read somewhere that one guy wrote a letter to a magazine I was reading. He said, I want to get into recording engineering. And the guy said, you have to learn to read music. I said, you don't have to learn to read music. So I don't know. Of course, now with the technology that's available, the digital technology, a lot of engineers are getting thrown out of a job.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even something as simple as pure editing, that's changed from back in the day when I got into radio.
Uh-huh.
You know, splicing. Splicing is like a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Digital editing.
Well, actually, you know, even though a lot of people say that is kind of ruined radio or production, it in some sense, it has, as Bob Kraft has said, but it actually makes our job easier.
I've done experimenting with digital editing, and it sounds easy, and it sounds a lot smoother.
It is.
I never actually edited using the old-fashioned way with a blade and all that kind of stuff, because I'm afraid it'd be kind of sloppy.
Actually, you can get right digitally, you can get right down to the minute detail.
Uh-huh.
What were some of your duties? Were you just on the air?
When I first got started on radio, I did basically night work, and then I started to do some production work.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever do any news reporting or?
No.
Did you do your share of remotes too?
Mostly running them.
Draw me some names. Who were some of the people you worked with both times that you were there?
Well, Bob Kraft was only there one time. The first, my first tour of duty was in 77, 84. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there on my second time, my second go-around.
Did you ever work with E.J. Clark?
E.J. Clark, he worked at WYL until they built WKMO.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I knew E.J. only from him working at WKMO.
Do you remember working with Steve Dennis?
Yes, I very much. Steve was the first guy, one of the first guys I worked for when I first got on WYL. And he was a real fun-loving guy. He had really wacko sense of humor.
I like Steve.
Yeah. I understand he's down in, I think, Atlanta?
Yeah, I think he's down there last time I talked to him.
Uh-huh. Well, he was a real fun-loving guy and...
great voice.
Yeah. He was great on the air. What happened was in June 1978, I was offered a job somewhere, and he left WYL, and I took over his midday spot. I didn't particularly care much for it. I rather worked nights because I was at the point that I was so used to working at night where I can sleep in during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten used to doing that. And I wasn't too happy with it. It was very hard for me to get a groove going when you're trying to get up at relatively a late hour, like 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning. I'd be there by 11. It was rough.
Well, that's true for about any kind of job, going from one shift to the other.
Uh-huh.
It messes up your eating and your sleeping habits.
Yeah.
Deanna Pazesny.
Oh, yeah, I knew Deanna. She and I were, very close. We're very close friends. I knew her from, she worked as receptionist, but she worked out in WKMO.
Mm-hmm.
There are times we would talk about things and all that.
Now she did traffic.
Yeah.
At one time.
Mm-hmm. That's where I knew her from.
What were some of your favorite records that you played there?
I had a lot of them. I really can't narrow down to any one or two records that I liked. I mean, there were a lot of records I liked were at WYL.
Imagine they spanned several decades.
Well, one song I liked a lot of songs from the 50s, like Elvis, like L.A. Elvis and Chuck Berry and, you know, the founding fathers of rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
But there was one song I liked that was kind of sentimental. I have a bit of a sentimental core in me, and there's a song by Debbie Reynolds called Tammy. It came out in the summer of 57, it was number one, and this was the height of the first onslaught of rock and roll, was that song. That was from a movie of the same name.
Yes, exactly.
And I mean, it's always been kind of a sentimental favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Another song that I liked a whole lot, what I would call my favorite guilty pleasure song, was the song by the Mermaids called Popsicles and Icicles.
I can't say I've ever heard that.
Yeah. It's kind of a jump. It's kind of a happy little song. And I liked it so much that I was playing it when we first got the record. I started playing it quite a bit, and Greg Leahy made a comment to me on the air about me liking that song so much. I was embarrassed.
That's another name, Greg Leahy. Talk about Greg Leahy.
The only thing I can identify with Greg Leahy is he was a big Elvis fanatic.
Was he?
Yeah. He told me that when he heard about Elvis, he was down in Louisiana. And we heard about Elvis's death on a Louisiana radio, on an Alabama radio station. Must have been powerful enough to reach Louisiana. He went to a funk for like, what, 3 days?
Did he?
Yeah. Greg was kind of a fun-loving guy. He was kind of silly sometimes.
Can you tell us some stories during your regime at 406 South Mulberry, which is not there anymore?
Yeah. We had a crazy inside joke when I worked at WYL. Steve Dennis used to do this as a joke. He would kiss a picture of a female artist, such as Olivia Newton-John or whatever. And I picked up on him doing that. And Dick Curtis, you remember him?
Yes.
Yeah, Dick Curtis. He came in and heard me doing that, saw me and heard me doing that. And he says, you know, you sound like a rat when you do that. So that's how I got started with the rat jokes. I make up the story that if a radio station plays any song by a female singer, a giant rat will walk into the building kissing all over the everything. So we had fun with that.
Hey, tell us about Dick Curtis.
Dick Curtis was a guy, he was he had a wry sense of humor. You know, he's one that got the idea about the rat joke going in, because it was him. He always had this really dry sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And one thing he was a real expert on is he was an expert on very old pop music.
Like,
for example, on some of the records at WIL, when I was there, he would have some of the records marked with song dates back to 1931, 1932, something like that. You know, if it's a remake or whatever. There's a lot of his writing on it.
You've kind of become gifted in that matter, too.
Well, thank you.
Talk about some of your favorite memories working at WIL.
I'll tell you one song I remembered I started playing about 2 weeks after I joined with WIL was You Light Out My Life by Debbie Boone. And right away I had girls and women calling up requesting that song like crazy. And the song was number one nationally for 10 weeks.
It was. Wasn't one of my favorites, but I got to hand it to Debbie Boone. That was very popular in my junior high years.
Yeah. But I tell you one thing, it got pretty old. And I started getting comments about, oh, I hate this song. Or after a while, it did get old. I mean, it was a burn song. Sometimes there's such a thing as overkill. But I tell you what's really sad. A lot of the music that I played back in the late 70s, early 80s when I was there, a lot of them you never hear anymore.
That is sad.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. One song that to me, I mean, I like the song, but I am so sick of hearing it all the time. It's Hotel California by the Eagles. That song has gotten played to death. I mean, I don't hate the song, and I'm not demeaning the group, but I just got tired of it.
Let me ask you this question. How important to the community do you think WIL was over the years? Can you discuss some of the impact you felt it had?
Well, WIL was the first station on the air in Hardin County. It was signed on in 1950. And from what I read about, they used to do what's called block programming.
Mm-hmm.
In the morning they would play, well, let's say, for example, I don't know the exact order, but they would play like easy listening music like in the morning, and then pick it up with country a little bit in the afternoon, and then at night they would rock it.
Right, yeah, I can remember that.
Yeah, they everything was extensively dayparted. When I worked at WIL, there was some music that was dayparted. Some of the traditional middle of the road stuff like Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole, all that was typically day play, from like 7 a.m. to like 3 p.m. You have to consider your audience, because most of your adults would listen during the day, and most teenagers would listen at night.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that just makes perfect sense. I mean, you're trying to, in a way, please everybody, and of course, that's an impossible task, but...
How did WIL do in the Arbitrons during your time there?
They did pretty well for an AM station. Especially when they're on 250 at night.
Right.
You know, 250, it reaches out. One time I, depending on the weather condition, I remembered I would lose WIL when I get to Radcliffe. It can only go, it sure gets picked up all over E-Town, but when you leave E-Town, like for example, I went south one time and I started losing it on like a Sonora. It just never had a really powerful signal. 1,000 watts, it did pretty well, but 250, it was a different story. That was in 1984 when it became okay for all 1,000-watt stations, AM stations, to broadcast around the clock on that power.
Now, was WSAC on the air during your first time at WIL?
Yeah, the AM was. The AM was on the air back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered on 1470... there were times that I could pick it up in Valley Station, where mm-hmm. I used to live. I picked it up pretty well. It was like a third top 40 station, other than Wacky and WKLO.
Mm. Now, you didn't commute from Valley Station to WIL, did you?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
I did for about... When I worked at another station, E-Town, I was commuting, which... I left me stressed out when I worry about the weather getting bad. And there were a couple times that when I was working at the other station, that I had to spend the night out of the station rather than risk going home in the middle of the night when the roads were in bad shape. And the same situation when I worked at WIL. One time a couple times Steve Dennis had me to stay with him when the weather was bad. This was back in 78 especially.
That was a rough winter, that in 77.
Yeah, we had two really rough winters.
Can you talk about the station changes and what's your feelings on ESPN?
Well, ESPN is, if you're a sports nut, is okay. It's not, I mean, personally, I don't listen because I'm not into sports a whole lot. And so I know some people do and all that, and I mean, that's fine. But sometimes I think ESPN, a few times I listen, and they seem to drone on and on and on and on and on.
I know WIL was top 40 from 1950 through 1989, fall of 1989.
Well, WIL, when I was there, the main format was Adult Contemporary. And that's a different thing than Top 40. And this is when I was starting to learn about how fragmented radio was becoming at that time period in the late 70s. And at the time also, I kind of resented it because I was a Top 40 person. I grew up on Top 40 where they played everything under the sun. Didn't matter what it was. That was the thing about Top 40 back in the 60s or early 70s was they played everything. But everything started to fragment. You start, you know, Adult Contemporary means, well, you're not going to play anything by Styx except Babe. You're not going to play anything like Grand Funk Railroad. Most of their stuff's awfully heavy. Stuff like that. I mean, Adult Contemporary was the old middle-of-the-road kind of thing, where back in the old days, middle-of-the-road was like Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole. But in the 70s, Adult Contemporary was like basically what they called easy rock or adult rock or soft rock or whatever. I mean, I remember some of the core artists that I played when I was there in the 70s, early 80s, like England Dan and John Ford Coley had all those string of hits. Mm-hmm. And all of them did well on the Adult Contemporary chart. Kenny Rogers, of course, he was the king of crossover. He had a lot of hits on all three of the major charts. He had pop and Adult Contemporary and country.
What do you think differentiates Adult Contemporary from Top 40?
It's basically softer, not as teeny bopperish. The overall sound is a little more, for the lack of a better term, adult, which means it's not heavy rock and roll, but it's not teeny bopper disco stuff, you know. It's just basically rock without the loudness. That would be my definition of Adult Contemporary.
Talk about some of the other stations you were at before and where you were when you left.
My first paying job was WLOU, an urban contemporary station.
That's Louisville.
That was in Louisville, yeah, 1350, which is now an R&B gospel station. Mm-hmm. I worked there for a couple months, and then my other paying job was I worked at WQXE when it was Beautiful Music.
That was my first job.
Yeah. When I worked at WQXE, when I first started working there, they were still playing, you know, records.
Right.
They were still playing hits. But they went Beautiful Music on my show, on my shift. I didn't like it. I didn't care much for it. I wanted to be a DJ, not somebody changing tapes every 3 hours.
Right.
Then my next job was WBRT in Bardstown. And for the first time, I felt really liberated. And here, I'm going to play records, and I can back announce these songs. You know, that kind of thing. And then I was offered a job at WIL. My first day at WIL was August the 15th, 1977. And the next day, what happened was I was initially calling myself Michael Gordon for a first and middle name. My first and middle name on the air. But what happened was I was driving to work the next day, August 16th, and I heard Steve Dennis said, and at 5 o'clock we have David Perkins and the best music. And I thought I got fired after the first night. It was so funny. But it was also the same day as a tragedy. That was the day Elvis Presley died.
Oh.
And I heard that, and I like went into shock. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that. I mean, he was 42 years old, and he was dead. I mean, it was just unreal. Well, the biggest loss for me in music is when John Lennon was murdered. What happened was that night, I was working nights at WIL, and Greg Leahy called me up and told me that John Lennon got shot. That's how he put it. So I went to the teletype, and sure enough, word came down that he died, and I didn't believe it. I mean, John Lennon was just 40 years old when he died. He was just coming back into music after 5 years of being away from the limelight, and shot dead in cold blood. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I remember when I went home that night, and I stayed up all night long listening to all my Beatle records, and I heard Bob Kraft sign on the next morning, or the following morning, and he played In My Life and You Gotta Hide Your Love Away, and he eulogized about John Lennon. So I finally went to bed. He called me at noon. I had him asleep, and he told me to bring all my Beatle records down. Mm-hmm. Have a big weekend. So I said, okay. But again, it was just hard to believe.
Actually, there's been more than one day that the music has died.
Yeah.
Of course, that plane crashed with Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens.
It was Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper.
Right, right.
It was February 3rd, 1959, in Iowa.
Right.
Clear Lake, Iowa. And that was probably the first real tragic event in the history of rock and roll. And Buddy Holly, at the time, was only 22 years old, but he was a major influence on a lot of the British musicians, most notably the Beatles. Matter of fact, Paul McCartney bought out all of Buddy's publishing. Of course, he's had some recent deaths in the music world.
Where did you go after WIL?
I worked for Bill at WEKY in Richmond, Kentucky. That was quite a travel, especially being far away from the Louisville market. It was a Lexington market. Mm-hmm. And Bill pretty much did the same formatics as he did with WIL. And I was only there for like a couple months, and then I went to WIRV in Irvine, Kentucky, which was a very small country AM station mm-hmm. on 1550. And then afterwards, I came back to E-Town and worked at what was then WSAC. And then I kind of got away from radio because I was getting kind of burned on it. And eventually, I came back to WIL back in 1986. Worked until 89, and then I was offered a job at what was then what they changed to WASE.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the station that eventually became Wacky in 2007.
Now that second time you came to WIL, you would have worked with Kalthorpe, Scott Gettle.
Kalthorpe, I worked with him. I was doing, I pulled some stints at WKMO, and Kale basically was the head guy there. He did work some with WIL, but he worked primarily with WKMO.
What do you miss about WIL or radio in general? Because I know you're not in radio now.
What I miss about radio is personality. It was very important, personality radio. Wacky and WKL and Louisville were both very personality driven radio. That's what made radio fun to listen to.
Those are the two stations I grew up on.
Yeah. But then everything became automated, voice tracking, the whole thing. And to me, what I hear a lot, you know, a lot on radio is I hear maybe a couple songs, and then I hear what's called a positioning statement. Hey, you're listening to this bad station, that kind of thing. Or, you know, some of that effect. But it, to me, radio today has no personality. All it is just music. I mean, great, people like music, okay, but I think people like to be entertained.
They do.
Like Bill Bailey. You know, he was a legend in Louisville. And it's just a shame. Of course, Wacky is now WKRD, and it's a sports station.
You mean the frequency?
The frequency, right. Yeah, 790 is still there. And 1080 is now
Talk Radio.
Talk Radio 1080. Mm-hmm. Used to be WKLO. And then it was WCII. It was a country station for a while.
Right.
So, you know, where I'm at, I listen to radio all the time. I used to have Wacky on. I used to listen to Wacky. And I can't get hardly any of the local stations at all. out here. There's these thick walls.
Right.
That's what I miss about radio. Personality. Personality, fun, you know, have a ball, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
That's all over.
Michael or Harry or however you choose to be called, it's been a joy talking to you.
Yeah, it was a joy here. Appreciate that.
You've been listening to an interview with Michael Marvin, a.k.a. Harry Harrison, on 14 WIL Online.